she told me to do it first. So. Ready? Hi, my name is Rhonda Pupella. If I hyphenated, I would be Rhonda Lou Nancaro Pupella. So I don't hyphenate, but I'm here with my sister. I live in Abilene, Texas, and today is April 6th, 2008. I just turned 50, and we're here to talk about our family.
And my name is Paula Bindle, and I live in Abilene, Texas. Today is April the 6th, 2008, and I'm Rhonda's older sister, and I will be 53 in May.
And I have two children, Tia and Faith Pupella, and they are 5.
And I have two children, Christopher, who's 22, and Katie, who will be 17 on June the 6th.
I guess first we're going to talk about our Nancaro side of the family, which is our dad's side. They are from Ravenswood, West Virginia, where my dad and his two brothers were born. Ravenswood was a showboat town on the Ohio River. It was a beautiful river, beautiful town, quaint population about 2,000 when we were growing up. It grows and shrinks depending on how the foil company is doing and local economics. But it was, like I say, a showboat town built on the Ohio River. There was a train and a hotel there. The town grew around the showboat shows, as I recall being told. There was a hotel, a real nice three-story hotel, two- or three-story hotel, and a train that went through. And when the showboat would come, I remember my grandmother telling a story of the cast running behind, getting to town early and hiding behind the hotel and the train. And when they would have Indians come through on the show, the Indians would come from behind the audience, behind the hotel, with their tomahawks and all dressed in costume and just scare them half to death. Grandmother used to talk about going to swimming. That's one of our favorite family stories.
You want me to tell that one?
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents came to visit us. We lived in the Washington, D.C. area, and my grandmother wanted to see the ocean. She'd never seen the ocean, so she came along with my grandfather and came to see the ocean once. That was a really big deal for her. The next time that they came, they came with both my grandparents were there, my grandmother's sister and my grandmother's brother and his wife. My grandmother's name was Mabel. Her brother's name was Mayford, but for some reason everybody called him Uncle Duck. I'm not really sure where that came from. And his wife's name was Gudrun. And one Saturday morning we went to the mall. We got there when it opened at 9 o'clock, and we spent 12 hours at the mall with my grandmother and my aunts. We came home with a tube of lipstick and two packages of Christmas cards. And that's all they bought in 12 hours. But we went to a restaurant there at the mall, and it was decorated with posters from the 1890s, people in bathing suits and the little small short jacket pants and stuff and the bowler hats. And grandmother started talking about going down to the river when she was a child to swim. And like Rhonda said, the town was right on the Ohio River, and the walk was not very far. But getting ready was the big deal. You had to put on a wool bathing suit, a wool bathing cap, a special pair of shoes, which I don't remember much about what she said about the shoes. And then they had to wear a raincoat over top of their wool bathing suit to go downtown, because you couldn't be seen in your bathing suit walking downtown.
And you also couldn't have any skin showing. They had to wear wool pantaloons that were belled at the knee, and then wool socks down to the shoes.
Mm-hmm, because of no exposed skin.
That's right, and everybody wore gray.
Mm-hmm. So then they would do that walk all the way down the hill and they'd get in there. And then, of course, as soon as you get in there, because it's a sandy place, the river bottom was sandy. When they would swim, they would collect large amounts of sand in their pantaloons, and then it would start pulling the bottoms down. So they would always be fighting, pulling the bottoms up to keep from exposing their skin. And so they were talking about all this. And I turned around and noticed that everybody in the restaurant had stopped eating, and they were all listening to Grandmother and Aunt Merle and them talking about those experiences. And then right when they were through talking, my grandmother just stopped. She took a deep breath and she said, "Why in the world did we think we were enjoying ourselves?" She said, "There wasn't anything fun about that at all." And then everybody in the restaurant started laughing. And then everyone went back to their regular activities and started finishing their meals and everything. But it was really a fun experience.
It was. They laughed about how hot it was in the summer, and then they had to wear more wool than they did in the winter and their overcoats. And then if they stayed in the water more than an hour, they would drown because the weight of the... And she said they couldn't swim. Nobody knew how to swim because of the sand in their pants. And Grandmother was a real neat person. One time I remember I was there and asked her how many times she got to vote. I was just turning of age to vote, and I had counted back every 4 years and had guessed how many times my grandmother had gotten to vote. And I was off by one. And she corrected me and said, "Well, Rhonda, suffrage hadn't begun yet. I had to wait another 4 years. I was in my mid-20s before I got to vote." And she was born in 1900. And that fascinated me. And come to find out, she was a little, I don't know.
She was a suffragette.
She was a suffragette, yeah. And she was very independent. We're very proud of her. She was a school teacher. And actually, she was engaged to another man when my grandfather became available and asked her to get married. She dropped her engagement, which was unheard of. Her dad was a Methodist preacher in town, and her grandfather or great-grandfather was a doctor. And so they held some prestige in Ravenswood, and they didn't do things that raised eyebrows, but Grandmother did, and she was a school teacher. And when she got married, she was not supposed to continue teaching. Back then, if you were assumed not to be a virgin, you were not allowed to teach, to be in public in front of young kids. Well, she knew she had done nothing wrong. And she wanted to continue teaching after she married. And this created quite a stir in this town, a large stir. But she was a real good school teacher, and she said she didn't know if she was going to get to keep her job until the day school started, the fall after she got married. And she stood on the edge of the town with her snake stick, like she always did. The parents in support of her sent their kids to see her. And she went down the path, getting the rattlesnakes and copperheads and all the other snakes out of the way of the kids, and they went to their one-room schoolhouse, and she continued to teach. And she continued to teach until she was pregnant. And then, of course, she was, you know, there would be no question that she would quit. Of course, she didn't quit. She was showing, and she did not quit till she had her first son, Chuck. And it wasn't as big a stink as before because the parents of the kids just continued to send the kids right with her. And she always stood up for knowing she wasn't doing anything wrong. She also... my granddad was a wonderful man, and he deserved her totally. He was just a great guy, but he worked in the railroad, and we have his stopwatches from the railroad. He worked during the Depression, and I can remember him talking about he was supposed to clear the, quote, tramps, unquote, the homeless people, out of the railroad cars, and he didn't really have the heart to do that. As a matter of fact, he used to bring them fat back from his own family's table. And he would often talk like he was prejudiced, but he was the one that kept a lot of these people alive and took food from his kids to keep minority children alive. So I don't know, it was a different social time back then. I've often wondered. And he was a diehard Democrat, and he used to make Grandmother go register him to vote. And she didn't think that was her civic duty but his, so she registered him, a straight ticket Republican, 1 year, and he never asked her to do that again. Of course, he didn't forget it either.
We used to go every summer home for 2 weeks to stay with my grandparents. Our parents would drive us over there to West Virginia. It was about a 9-hour drive, and there was no interstate at that point in time. And so we went around long, windy roads. walking we would go on these winding roads round and round and round and round and circles up and down the sides of the mountains to get to grandmother and granddad's. And unfortunately, I have motion sickness, so I spent a lot of my time with my head out the window throwing up. Of course, there was always construction on those mountain roads at that time, and so there was lots of tar smells and that kind of stuff. Dad was not what you call a patient driver, and he liked to get in the car and go and not stop. And so we had the days in the car were long. There were no bathroom breaks, and there were no stops for lunch or anything like that. But we were really excited to be in the car because we enjoyed those 2 weeks so much. We spent lots of hours playing pinochle on the front porch with cousins and my granddad. He loved to play pinochle. My grandmother, while she was an extremely conservative person, was a huge fan of Johnny Carson, which was a kind of a disconnect for me because at that time his TV show was kind of on the risque side sometimes with the comedy, but she stayed up every night to watch Johnny Carson. That was the only thing besides the weather that she watched was Johnny Carson and the evening weather. And some of my favorite stories of my grandmother's come from her lifelong friends. When she was 12, she and a group of girls got together and they started this club called the Cola Club. And for the rest of their lives, they were pretty much bound together. They midwifed for each other sometimes when babies were born. They gave baby showers for each other, helped with weddings for each other, did all kinds of things, supported each other unconditionally, always. Now, some of those ladies were characters. There were two women, by the time that I was old enough to understand what the Cola Club really was, these ladies were in their late 60s, some in their 70s at that time, and they were still meeting together. They quit meeting in the evenings because a lot of them weren't, it wasn't safe for them to drive after dark any longer, so their meetings were in the afternoons, and I was actually at a couple of those that I can remember. One of the two sisters that lived together in that little town lived with their father. Neither one of them ever married, and they were very sheltered. And their daddy told them to always, every Saturday, to get in the car and go downtown and put 2 gallons of gas in the car. So they did that religiously every Saturday for decades. And one time they ran out of gas, and they called from someplace, I'm not sure where, called my grandfather to come and get them. And they just could not understand why they'd run out of gas because they had put their $2 in the Saturday before. But they were never accounting for changes in gas prices and the fact that their car was 40 years old and weighed way more than any other car that was current, you know. And so they were sweet, sweet ladies. And grandmother and granddad took care of them, I think, until they both died. They just took him to the doctor, and my granddad kind of turned into the chauffeur for the Cola Club widow ladies and took them all to the grocery store and into Charleston to their doctor appointments and all of those kinds of things. Several of those women were really characters. My grandmother had a really close friend who drove but unfortunately had cataracts, and my grandmother never learned to drive. And after my grandfather was gone, and my grandmother didn't have a way to get around, this lady would come and pick up my grandmother and drive her around town. The lady would hug the curb around the corner to my grandmother's house, and then she would, my grandmother would get out in the car and sit in the passenger seat, and she would tell this woman when to start, how slow to go, and then when they were coming up to a stop sign, she would say, tell her to stop, then she would tell her to turn right, and my grandmother, who'd never driven in her life, gave all the directions for how to get around town. That was amazing to me that they worked that well together, and it always scared me. It always scared me when I knew she was going to get in the car with her, because never knew how well she judged, but apparently she did okay, because they never had an accident together.
I asked her one time, how did she get home, and grandmother would line her up on the curb, because she only lived 2 blocks away, and the scary part was going across the one street on the curb. I asked Grandmother, how could you do that? And she said, well, I guess nobody understood. She was a good driver. She just couldn't see. And she never understood why Granddad get upset with her going around town with a blind driver. But
in our 2 weeks in the summer, we had two other cousins that would always come the same time we did. And that was, then we called him Chucky. He goes by a different name now, but it was Chuck and Jana, and they would be there. And we played the same games every summer, and probably until we were close to junior high school. But we would sit on Grandmother and Granddad's front porch, and we would pretend we were writing a newspaper, and we would take turns writing the type. Some of us didn't really know how to write yet. Like when we first started playing, Rhonda would write the newspaper articles, but she just wrote little chicken scratch. It wasn't not many letters. And later on, she became the artist.
Yes, and the only people I knew how to draw was the potato family.
Yeah, so she drew cartoons about the potato family. And we made our little newspapers, and we walked around the block and wrote down license plates every summer. And then when we got older, we kept the list and we compared to see if any of them were back the next summer. But those were simpler times for play. I don't think children play like that very much anymore.
But it was fun.
But it was a lot of fun.
And we were so close. And I wanted to read, I brought my either great-grandfather that was a doctor because he was a high school graduate and he had 4 or 5 medical books, which we still have. And that was enough to qualify you as a doctor back then. But he also made health tablets called Bertone tablets. And I got a bottle here. I want to read it. It's Bertone tablets. Acts pleasantly. Cleansing the stomach and regulating the liver and bowels. Women will find them to be very effective in the treatment of ailments peculiar to their sex. 25 cents. The United Store Company of Ravenswood, West Virginia. And there's directions on the back how to take it, not to give it to kids under 12. But anyway, the medical books, most of them are filled with something called consumption, which I think probably was cancer. I don't know. I'm not a medical personnel, but.
Yeah, I don't know what that, I don't know what consumption, I've heard that, you know, in old movies and things, but I don't know what that's.
It was a wasting away, I think.
So probably cancer.
Yeah. Anyway, those were good times.
Do we want to move on to the Phelps side now?
Yeah. Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Will you start?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say that we do come from a long line of very strong-willed women and brave women and really good ladies. Grandmother Phelps was 4'10" tall. Grandmother Nancaro was the same height. And both Granddad Nancaro and Grandfather Phelps were 6'2". So they made funny-looking couples when they walked down the street sometimes from behind.
You know what? We forgot Grandmother Nancaro had polio when she was young and was never supposed to walk. And she had one leg shorter than the other. And she, because of her doctor in the family, had said that he wouldn't want her with a cane and that she would run again. Of course, she never ran again. She said that's what she was looking forward to in heaven, was being able to run. But instead of a cane, she weighted her purse. And when we went out, depending on how she was feeling that day, if her wallet was too much or her house keys were too much of a weighted object in her purse, she would take one or the other out so that she could walk better. So we always had to kind of be careful that we could come back home when we took Grandmother out.
Make sure she had a key somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. Well, and see, another thing was that a part of that story was is that because Grandfather Camp had some medical background, he designed a therapy for Grandmother so that she wouldn't limp,
mm-hmm.
and did not allow her to try to balance herself by moving her arms like a lot of polio victims had to do. He tied her arms to her body for a long period of time and didn't let her do that. And that's why she learned to walk so still, and why she kept her hand always so, you know, if you noticed her, she always kept that one arm close to her
body.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
That's because for a long time she was tied like that so that she could learn to balance that way. Mm-hmm. That's how he helped her not be so handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
That was his physical therapy program. It's a little different now, but it worked. Grandmother Phelps was engaged at a younger age than I'm aware of. I think maybe in her early teens, to a young man who had bought farmland, had built a house, and had furnished a house, and they were to be married shortly. And he came out to get her one Sunday to take her on a ride out to see the new house and how everything was going. And during that ride, he kind of leaned a little too close to her, and he patted her on the
knee.
Right close to the knee. And she considered that to be extremely forward and inappropriate, and she broke the engagement over that and never married that gentleman. So 4 years later, she met my grandfather, or 4 years later, she married my grandfather. She was 24, and that was, at that point in time, to be fairly old to be marrying for the first time. And she married my grandfather Phelps. He was 4 years younger than my grandmother. They together had 11 children, three of whom did not survive infancy or early toddler years. They're all buried in a
Whitechapel.
In the cemetery. Mm-hmm. But there were eight surviving children. There were six sisters and two brothers. And we have lots of fun stories from our aunts. They were fun when we were kids. Do you want to tell a Phelps story, and then I'll tell a Phelps story?
Okay, well, one I remember first off is my mother's birth. She was the youngest, Arnetha Phelps Nancaro. She, her next older sister was 7 years older, and Grandmother Phelps had not had a period for 7 years since the birth of Rosetta. And one day she came up to my grandfather, Herbert, and said that she was pregnant, that she had life moving in her. Well, he said, "Woman, you ain't seen a spot in 7 years. There's no way. That's gas." And she said, "Herbert, I know the difference between a little gas and life moving in me, and this is life moving in me." Well, of course, she was pregnant. She had my mother. She was 45. And from then on, my mother's nickname was a little gas. She was the last daughter and somewhat spoiled. And her sister Rosetta used to have to watch her a lot. And one time, they thought that she had gone out and eaten poison berries. And so Rosetta was home alone with her and got a bar of lye soap and poured hot water over it over a bucket and made Mom drink a glass. Well, the joke was the lye soap almost killed her, not the berries. And it wasn't poisonous berries, as it turned out to be. But they had a lot of fun on the farm. Also, Rosetta. Mom used to go, after a rain, she'd go under those beautiful, lush trees in West Virginia in the mountains and grab a branch and pull it down and sprinkle herself with water. And one year, Rosetta got up, and I think it was Rosetta. We kind of get it mixed up. The sisters aren't around to tell the stories anymore. But she climbed up in a tree with a bucket of water, and when Mom pulled on the branch to get a little sprinkle, she doused her with a whole bucket. Got in a lot of trouble, but...
Grandmother and Granddad had a little farm on what they called Turkey Creek. I never did really see the creek because we always climbed up the mountain. We never really went down the holler. But and Granddad was a tobacco farmer. That was his cash crop. And when the boys got older, the male cousins got older, they would go and help him sometimes in the tobacco barn. And one time, a couple of them got out there, and they just... The granddad had his leaves curing in the tobacco barn, and the boys pulled some, and they rolled them up to make cigarette. And I don't remember which one it was, which cousin it was, but one of them lit the tobacco, and in a little bit, a little green worm came out of the end of the, and the smoke had chased him out of the cigarette.
Granddad. Dad was there.
Oh, that was Granddad?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. Said he looked really funny. So he watched the end of the... His eyes crossed as he watched the end of the cigar when the green worm came out.
How funny. I always thought that the other way around. Hmm. Granddad was a real quiet man. He didn't say very much. And when I was young, I was kind of taken aback by that because our other grandfather was so friendly and jovial, and Granddad Phelps was a very quiet man. Mm-hmm. But there were times when we would have, when we went home, is whenever my dad's, when my dad's vacation was, is when the family reunion was for the Phelps family, because everybody else lived around there. We were the only ones that lived away. And so everybody came home when we came home for vacation, and the uncles would all gather out on the front porch, and they would tell stories, and oh, sometimes they made up outlandish things. And so, and the young cousins, the male cousins, were always out there. Not very many of the girls, but Rhonda and I always went out there and listened. And it was so much fun to listen to those men giggle and laugh and have a good time. And that's the times when I saw Grandfather the most, Granddad the most animated, was when he was out there with all the son-in-laws and the grandsons and visiting.
They're all trying to outlie each other.
Yeah, and they were all trying to outlie each other with the best story.
And he would chew tobacco, and he was a really good spitter. He would try to, when the grandkids were running around in front of him, he would spit in between their legs while we were running and never got us dirty. We also, when we go on vacation, I can remember climbing the mountain across from the farm. It was in Mitchell County, West Virginia, in Hurricane, West Virginia. And we would go to the mountain across and pick tea berry leaves and wild blueberries and bring them back. And we would eat the wild blueberries, a lot of them while we were up there. And then we'd wash the tea berry leaves and soak them in ice water in the refrigerator, which was a new addition to the farm. She used to have an ice chest. And then chew them later for gum. And, of course, it's so hard to find tea berry gum now, but that was always a good memory. Mm-hmm. And Grandmother always cooked ham and red-eye gravy and rice and homemade biscuits for breakfast every morning. I remember
and
that.
And fried apples.
And fried apples, yeah.
And fried apples. And she drank Postum and ate rice and had terrible trouble with her cholesterol and never ate any meat. And Granddad ate all that pork and stuff and never had a cholesterol problem.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
He died at 80 getting a stump out of the yard.
Mm-hmm. Had a cerebral hemorrage.
Mm-hmm. But the girls used to family reunions, the sisters and two and one brother. One brother had died young and he was a cab driver.
It's a truck driver.
Truck driver and was killed in a car accident, truck accident. But they would sit around, tell farm stories, and they would talk about aunts and uncles. And one of their older aunts, she was very heavy. I remember one time they were talking about she was visiting, and the family, it was a small, it was just two to three bedroom farmhouse. But one time she had gone to bed early and was sitting down on the chamber pot and misjudged. She's very obese, they said. And the chamber pot was on a throw rug, and they had very nice polished floors. The grandmother kept that farmhouse spotless. Anyway, as she sat down on the chamber pot, I guess she forgot to shut the bedroom door or it opened towards the outside. Anyway, she went flying through the house and landed up, excuse me, in the middle of all the kids, right by front of the fireplace while they were telling stories with their pants down, sitting on the chamber pot. And they, of course, nobody forgot that. They're also by that fireplace. One time they were all sitting around. They were younger. And somebody passed gas. And apparently it was bad enough to nauseate everybody. And Grandfather wanted to know who did that. And nobody would own up to it. None of the girls would own up to it. And so he promised them the next flour sack dress to whoever would own up to that. Where our Aunt Frances owned up to it. But they always laughed it well into their 50s and 60s. As to who the fart dress actually belonged to, and did Frances really do that, or did she just want the dress? And they just giggle. Nobody ever did tell the truth about it.
So we don't know who the culprit really was.
Mm-mm.
To this day, do we?
Mm-mm. But we know who got the dress.
Rhonda talked about Grandmother Phelps being pregnant at 45 with our mother, but my mother's oldest sister was Eunice, and she was actually pregnant at the same time that my grandmother was pregnant. So they were pregnant together. And my mother was always very close to Aunt Eunice's first child because they were babies together. And at one point in time, Aunt Eunice was living in a little ways away from the farm, and she needed some help because she had young babies. And so my grandmother sent, I believe it was Genevieve, over to stay with her for a while and help her. And Eunice and Genevieve didn't have the same style of house cleaning. Eunice was a little more lax at that time than Genevieve was comfortable for. And she kept a chicken in the house. Eunice kept a chicken in the house. Okay. And that just really drove Peg nuts. And so she was down there taking care of her, and she threw the chicken out. She was down there, and she threw the chicken out. And Eunice brought the chicken back, put it back in the house, put it back on the nest. So at one point in time, Peg was down by the creek, and she, that chicken was down there. And so she hated having it in the house so much that she tried to drown it in the creek. And so she pushed it under the water, and it bubbled and bubbled and bubbled and gasped and gasped and gasped. And it finally made it out of the creek and ran back to the house, but it had brain damage. And so had trouble walking and all this kind of stuff from being nearly drowned. And Eunice got really, really angry. And she asked Peg why she did that. And she said, I just was trying to baptize it in the river. I wanted it to be saved. And that's all she would say about it. But, and that's all I know about the rest of the story. That I don't know the rest of the story about that. And like I said, Grandmother Phelps was very small. And there's one of my favorite stories is that, Grandmother was, one of the uncles was picking her up at the farm to take her into town for a shower. And he had an old car from the 40s, you know, the kind with the really bowed back window. And Grandmother was used to getting up into Granddad's truck. And so she just really wasn't, I guess she wasn't paying much attention or really checking on the surroundings. And so she stepped up onto the back seat, like she would have to do to get into Granddad's truck. And then she sat down in the back windowsill, and she was all hunched over. And nobody said anything to her because you just didn't.
She's a very proud woman.
She was very proud, and you just didn't come. You just didn't tell Grandmother she'd done something wrong. So she rode all the way into town like that, went to the shower, had a hard time getting out of the back side of the back into the car. And when the shower was over, she got right back in that car the same way and sat down back seat and rode all the way back down to the farm like that. And apparently no one ever said anything to her about it. But when she got home, she said something about what in the world's the matter with that man to buy a car like that. That's so uncomfortable. Nobody ever, I guess, addressed it to her that we know of.
Mom also had a lot of pets on the farm. When she was 5, she had a pet cow named Anna Josephus Pusswinkle Cherry. And she adopted several chickens. And every Sunday after church, a lot of the church members and family all came over for fried chicken. And Mom was always really worried about her pet chickens ended up on the Sunday platter. And so she would paint her chickens' toenails red. And that was somewhat surprising to a lot of the church members. And a lot of the family, they always knew to leave the chickens with the red toenails alone. And I remember her talking about them making apple pies the day before, and they used a heavy lard. And she said it was so neat that they only had a couple of pie plates. And so they would make a couple of pies and then dump them out of the pie plate and then stack these pies 5 and 6 deep on top of each other to save room and put a cloth over it. And then they'd wait till the next day to eat them.
Yeah, and they said Grandmother could stack them up pretty high and not have them crack.
Yeah.
The tops wouldn't crack.
So they were just delicious. And then she had a dog named Penny. You want to talk about that?
Okay. My grandmother had a dog named Penny, named because she had she was white with brown spots. And at one point in time, the family went to Laywell Church of Christ up on the side of the mountain. And Penny decided that she wanted to go to church. And so one Sunday, she just followed Grandmother to church and sat under the pew. Well, Grandmother was just kind of uncomfortable with that, having the dog at church. And so she told Herbert she didn't want Penny to go. And so he tied her up the next Sunday. He tied her up. And so they tied her up that one Saturday. And then the next Saturday, when Granddad went to tie her up so she couldn't follow him on Sunday to church, she wasn't around anywhere. So apparently the dog figured out what the plan was And every Sunday, somehow that dog ended up at church, but Granddad could never catch her, could never get her tied up again. And I think finally Penny just went to church.
She sat under the pew.
Sent her to grandmother's pew on Sundays.
Embarrassed her half to death.
Mm-hmm. Penny was a smart dog, and she would bring in Granddad's cows in the evening. And one time Grandfather sold a cow. And, you know, Penny was used to, Granddad said she counted the legs to make sure she had all the cattle in. And so she went down to the field and she was short a set of legs. And so she brought one of the mules in, too. And Granddad said that she kicked that mule all the way. The mule kicked that dog all the way down to the barn. But he kept nipping at the back of his legs and he brought the cows and the mule in. We probably are, there's not many people, I don't think, of our generation that can remember going to visit a family member who lived in a house with no electricity or no running water, with an outhouse and a wooden sink in the kitchen and a pump. And I don't know if you remember being there, but you were with us, but we went to Eunice and Charlie's one time. And they were raising rabbits, and he did beehives and things like that for a cash crop. And we went to their house, and I was shocked to find that they had a wooden sink and a pump. And it was so much fun to get to do that. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember, being scared to death of the spiders in the outhouse. And I do remember the pump. But it was wonderful water. It was cold. I don't know where it came from. Some mountain spring, but it was cold and delicious.
Yeah, it was really good. And the carrots were really sweet. You remember he grew a whole bunch of carrots for some reason. I can't remember what it was. Maybe in feeding them to the rabbits. I don't know. But he pulled some carrots up out of the garden, and they were the brightest orange I've ever seen. And he washed them off for us and gave them to us. And they were just like candy. They were so sweet.
Well, I remember just being on the farm in West Virginia on the Phelps side, and the cooking was fantastic. And they raised their own food, and even though they were tobacco farmers, of course, they grew their own...
Truck garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and raised their own meat and processed their own meat. My mother would never eat sausage because she used to watch them make, from beginning to end, sausage. Well, she would never eat any kind of pork. But anyways, canning green beans, I remember that, making jelly, canning. They had a cellar, and they had a sauerkraut container. They made their own sauerkraut, and they'd wrap apples in newspaper and keep those in the cellar. And it was just a real rich heritage. Unfortunately, there's hardly anybody left in West Virginia. Out of all those hundreds of relatives, very literally, you know, we had seven aunts and uncles, and most of them had large families and lots of grandkids, and then also on my dad's side, there was two other complete families. But, you know, it's real sad that our children won't get to see some of that. There's a development where the farm is, and just everybody's spread out, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like it used to be, so we're real grateful to have this opportunity.